This is a Collider.com audio interview.
There's been a lot of rumors that there's going to be a two-hour movie or two-hour movies, and a lot of fans want to know.
I know what you know. I read the trades now because I want to know what's happening. I've heard they're going to do them, and that's all I can tell you.
What do you want them to do?
Doesn't matter. I tell you this, I couldn't be more proud of that show and my involvement in it. It was one of the greatest experiences creatively and personally. Just recently that the fact that the Screen Actors Guild gave us that ensemble nomination. The most lovely thing about that was the excuse to call all those folks up to. McShane called me in the morning. I talked to Dayton, Callie. Later that afternoon, I talked to Anna. I talked to, it was just great to be able to pick up the phone and hear those people's voices again. And David Milch was, I try to think positively that, I might have soaked a little bit of that up, that I might somehow take some of that brilliance with me to other jobs. It was unbelievable what it was like. And unbelievable in that consistently, every day I showed up on that set, he did something that just I was wowed by, that I just didn't see coming. It was never, it's unbelievable in terms of, the one hesitation you have when, at least I had, the idea of doing a series was this sense of how long will it go and when will it get boring? At what point does it no longer have much to offer? And that point never came. It was really quite something.
That still eludes the question as to whether you'd want there to be a two-hour film project.
Well, the only reason that it's sort of, I think, pointless to entertain that idea is because until there's something in front of me to make a decision about, I think that it's better for my mindset that I'm moving forward. And I think that until that phone call comes, it's sort of pointless to get too hung up on that.
It's just part of the issue. This movie and a little Die Hard movie that you, you're in. I mean, how surprised are you? I guess that this is you becoming so successful, and how can you talk about your involvement in Die Hard?
No, I feel very, very blessed. I feel very fortunate. The fact is, over a number of years now, I've been allowed to work fairly consistently, and also I've been lucky to be able to play quite a diverse group of characters. The fact that continues it really means the world to me, because it's what's fun about the profession, going from one thing to the next and being able to do things that I find surprising. It's not something I thought might have been in the repertoire, kind of thing. It really makes the job so much fun. And I think at the same time, as far as success is concerned, and basically what you're saying is just higher profile jobs and things. And the downside is my private life gets a little less private. Which is something that you hope that you're at a place, and I hope that I'm at a place in my life where that's not too disruptive.
Was it easy for you to say yes to Die Hard? I mean, there's always a risk, I suppose.
It was easy. That offer came in, and it seemed like a no-brainer. I mean, you know what you're signing up for, and you know it's probably going to be a good time. And I've never been in a, or at least play that substantial of a role in sort of a classic great American popcorn movie. And then it just becomes personal things. It shoots here in L.A. I literally work for just a few weeks. seems like fun.
Jennifer and Suzanne described a sort of interrupt this feeling of the delay in the release. How has that affected you?
The catching previously unreleased?
Yes.
How has it affected me? You know, not so bad. I mean, I imagine there's some sort of ripple effect in terms of, you know, how that, you know, career-wise, when movies come out, it raises a certain interest and stuff. But for the most part, I've, you know, gone about my life and professional life in a fairly, you know, feels like more or less the same. I think in the end of the day that, you know, you all that you feel in terms of if there's any kind of anxiousness for it to get out there, is that, you know, part of the thing about this kind of a job is you're telling a story and you want an audience. You know, that's the only thing. You kind of look forward to, you know, it's not theater. You know, the beauty of theater, obviously, is that intimacy and that thing of like, you know, I do this and you respond and we're all kind of taking part in this. And the only disappointment of anything being held for a long time is you're waiting for that you know, thing to bounce back.
How different is your character, your villainous character, to Liffrey, that art, compared to Alan Rickman in the first time, who was so in your face?
His is going to be much better. That's a little guess. It really is quite different. I just started, this week, so we're kind of, you know, feeling it out. And you know, there's something. It's a cyber terrorist plot, and based on this article that apparently was in Wired magazine a few years ago that. Saying as horrific and sad as it is, seeing a building come down, that the real threat to the country was cyber terrorism. That if somebody was to be able to hack into that infrastructure, they could cripple the country in a matter of days. This character is a guy who used to work for the government and warned them of this possibility, and is now sort of is carrying it out. So. It implies, as you know, there's, you know, in its own right, it's a different character and it's a different villain. There's something that feels maybe a little more unstable about someone who would do that kind of a thing. You know, the ouch doesn't really match the pinch. You know, it's a guy whose career was ruined and is now sort of saying, you know, I told you so.
Have you been blown up or beat up yet?
Not yet. But I have a sneaky suspicion.
Now, it's a funny coincidence you're with Kevin Smith. But
I went first day. There's Kevin.
No.
Disappointed. No, I'm sorry.
Sorry. He really doesn't like that one.
He was throwing things out there, by the way, on Die Hard. And not just for his character. Kevin's funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a unique human being. How do you interact with him as somebody who might be a more conventional, straight ahead kind of actor?
I try not to interact with him too much because it ends up on a blog. Wait a minute, did you just call me, what did you call me, a conventional actor? What did you just say?
more straightforward actor.
Straightforward actor.
You got a script.
How do you know about my straightforward and not straightforward?
Because of the way you speak. The way you approach the thoughtfulness you have towards your roles.
Well,
and because the director told us that Kevin was this way.
Sorry. Yeah.
I'm curious if being around somebody like who is...
It's all the same. I really think it's all the same. Yeah, absolutely. I think in the end of the day, it's, you know, you read enough to know that everybody's going about it in their own way, in different ways, but when it comes down to it, it's, you know, you're doing some very simple actions that that help move the story and tell, you know, I think in the end of the day, my job's the same. I have a sense of what the scene's about and what I'm trying to do. And other than that, you make yourself available to what's going on around you. You know what I mean? In terms of it's like a boxing metaphor. You know, you have a sense of what you're trying to accomplish, but once you get in the ring, you know, you don't want to be so stuck in that, because if the other guy does something that you weren't expecting, it might be a good idea to come up with another idea, plan. You know, and I think that's all it is. And I don't find working with Kevin any different than working with anybody else. In a way, all it does is force you to listen more, which because you don't know what he's going to say.
And that's a good thing.
And that's not a bad thing.
That's
not
a bad thing. Jennifer, was it different than you expected? Have you seen Alias?
No, you know, I've known her for a long time. I knew her years ago in New York, and when she and I were both just first starting, and it was very refreshing to see that more or less she was the same girl I knew then. She's just a lovely person, and she's a real pro. She knows everybody's name. She's on time. She's one of those people that, despite being this kind of major star, you know, she's one of the guys. You know, and I really appreciate that a great deal, because for me this was a real opportunity to play a role I've not played with a big star, and she felt she made me feel very relaxed, very at home. And it was, so
what was the attraction of this role? I mean, as you said, you get to play the character quite like this in a movie like this.
Well, that was a big part of it. I mean, it was a big part of it. It was an opportunity to play, you know, leading man, romantic lead. But it was also an opportunity to play a great character. You know, at the end of the day, you know, as more opportunities come to me, anyone who goes to the movies or watches television knows that oftentimes the lead roles are the most boring. So, you know, you try to find the ones that are as fun as possible, or as rich as possible. You know, Susanna writes really, really well. And it was a fun character. It was a fun character because I think that, you know, at the end of the day, whether you're any of these roles, whether they're the comedic ones or Bullock or whatever, you know, I find that there's something, if you can find something that allows the character to be surprising, where you don't quite see the moment coming, where you're not quite sure what the character is going to do next. And you know, for a conventional leading man role, this had a lot of those moments.
What's going on with Hitman?
I don't know.
Are you still attached to it?
I was. I don't think I've ever been officially attached to it, contrary to the internet.
Is it something you're interested in?
It sounds fun. It sounds pretty cool. I've seen the pictures. I've never played the game, but it looks cool. Lord knows, who knows what I look like when this hair comes off. But
there's not a good history.
It's a major concern.
There's not a good history of video game movies, though. So what gives you the confidence that could be a good one?
No, that's a good point. I don't. I mean, I think you'd start with the. You start like always. You start with the script, and then you ask yourself, who's going to tell that story? And if I'm not mistaken, you got Luc Besson right now, who's done very good movies in that genre. La Femme Nikita. I remember walking around for weeks just saying, La Femme Nikita. Well, I mean, that was just such a good movie. Gosh, that was great. And then The Professional was... I just watched The Professional again like 2 weeks ago. It's a good movie. It's such a bizarre... You know, I haven't seen the long version. I hear the long version is unbelievable. Right? Where he goes and kills people with her?
Yep.
Haven't seen it. It's such a great, sweet story, and such like a funny. No, but I mean, you know what I mean. It's like a metaphor for parenthood, you know, in this warped way. You know, you're trying to essentially, you know, teach your children how to survive without you. You know, and it's really quite something.
So they have a
approached it, but you haven't officially signed on.
There's been conversation.
So what have you, what else have you been talking about? How long have you been? Other things, do you know what you're doing after that?
No, don't know what I'm doing after that.
As an actor, is it different for you working with somebody who's both a writer and a director? Do you feel like
no.
a single vision at the heart of the movie?
Well, you know, it's always great when there's clearly one person in charge. I mean, it's fantastic. You know, arguably David Milch was both writer and director, you know. You know, it doesn't mean anything if the writer and the director are the same person and that person sucks. You know what I mean? But it means a great deal when you're talking about someone who really, it's always great to have one person tell you a story, you know. And go, no, that's it.
Is there something about being a swimmer and being competitive that is difficult when you're acting and it's about teamwork and it's about some kind of synchronization? Is that difficult for somebody who is obviously naturally competitive? Because there's really very few sports or very few things that I can think of that are more competitive than
You know, I remember when I first started coming to grips with the fact that, unlike swimming, not only the fastest person didn't always win, and that was a tricky thing to kind of wrap your head around. You know, in terms of in sport, the winner is clearly the winner, and in this job, in terms of getting jobs, that you can be the guy that they said blew everybody away, not the one that we're going with. And that's people are opening and doors, opening and closing doors for you know that you're you have you know it's out of your control. But you know that's a lesson in life. You realize you can't do anything about it, so you just have to disregard it and move on.
But in scenes particularly,
I don't ever find myself thinking. I've not thought about it. I enjoy the job a great deal, and one of the things I enjoy about it is that collaborative spirit, so to speak. I enjoy the relationships. I enjoy the creative atmosphere that is both sort of. Is sort of social in a way, and you know, as you recently listened to David Lynch, you know, it's this thing where you know the ideas are everywhere, you know, and there's something fun about being on a set, and not just the relationship with the director and the other actors, but the crew and all of it, and it's true, the ideas are sort of everywhere. There's things informing you all the time, and there's things to work off of all the time. I remember one of my early, my first good experience on a film set. I remember when I first started acting, I was doing plays, and I had done some television, and I did this one small part in a movie, and I just couldn't figure out what was fun about it. It just, the experiences were very vapid, or it was not inspiring at all. But I did this one day on Life Less Ordinary with Holly Hunter, and we were in the middle of a take on her coverage, and a breeze kind of kicked up, and she stopped and kind of turned her face into the breeze, and her hair kind of blew back, and I thought, is she ruining her take? I thought, this is the craziest thing ever. And then it occurred to me that she was just working off what she was given, and she was just dialed into the experience and the moment. And it was the first time I thought, aha, look at this, you can go on a film set and you can aspire to do something really creative and really, I don't know if it translates, but it was the first time I just didn't see someone manufacture. Nothing about it was manufactured, and it was really quite beautiful. And I find the experience on film sets, that's the place you want to be. She seemed totally unaware of herself, you know.
What can you tell us about the Kimberly Pierce film?
It's called Stop Loss. Stop Loss. With Ryan Phillippe and Channing Tatum. And Ryan, it's about these soldiers that come back. I think they're finished with their tour of duty, and then they're called back to the crisis in the Middle East. I play a lieutenant colonel who is essentially the guy who's saying, "Look, you got to go back. There's nothing you can do about it." I'm sort of his last effort. Well, I guess he goes to a senator after me, to try to get it, try to fight it. Ryan.
Can you talk about your how'd you get involved with the radio show, 103.1?
I was a big fan of that station. That's one of the great radio stations, certainly here in L.A. And I went in. I had friends in common. I went in to do some publicity for Deadwood. And I thought, well, I'd love to do something on the show. And the next day I called in sports. And it's been, that was 7 months ago or so. Yeah, it's been fun.
Do you write all your stuff? I mean,
I just read the paper. I wake up in the morning and I lay out the sports page in front of me. And I just pick up the phone. I call them or they call me. And I tell them what's in front of me. And if I don't, other than that, I could also just tell them what my brother scored a 270 this weekend at the golf course. I do, it's really it's a great thing. I really enjoy doing it. And Joe Escalante is a class act. I'm a big fan, so it's been great.
Which station is it, by the way?
103.1, Indy 103, here in Los Angeles, an alternative rock punk station. I do the sports. And David Lynch does the weather. And I'm not joking.
I think this is once a week, I think.
No, there's every day.
It's every day?
Monday through Friday.
So we have time for two more questions.
What's that? It's online, yeah. You can go online and pull up like Friday Sports Report. So probably they tend to have the keep it on there.
I'm trying to imagine David Lynch committing to any kind of weather, but anyway.
He does it every day on his website, and so this is sort of an extension of what he was already doing for I think a few years now. Every day he gets up and he does the weather, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It's really quite. It's really quite. No, I really think there's a there's real genius to it. I think what he's doing is really quite interesting. But there's a pain, Anyway, something about the
it's
yeah, I agree with you. Big fan.
Are you a big city guy or you're a fish out of water ever? Like your character in the movie, or do you feel more comfortable in a small town?
Oh, that's I never really thought about it. I feel like my wife and I have often said we've lived in every from tiny little beach town to New York and L.A. And we look back and we realize we were always pretty happy. So we always find I think you create your own community. I've been really lucky that way.
Thank you.